Is it on? Desire and interest in your prayers this afternoon. The Lord would bless the thoughts that I'd like to share with you. Try to be as brief as possible. I know it's a warm afternoon, and I know how sleepy I get in afternoon service. And so I'll try to make this as concise as the Lord would have me to. I'd like for you to, for a short period of time here, kind of shift your mind away a little bit from where maybe we've been through a good part of this meeting. And the thoughts in the, that I have to share with you this afternoon maybe are just a little different than what we have been hearing, but it's part of the Word of the Lord, so I think it's important for us. I'd like to begin in the book of Psalms, second chapter, and I'd like to read part of the first verse. It says, "Why do the heathen rage?" And if you wanted to write down a title of my message, that's the title. Why do the heathen rage? The first word here in this verse that we read was why. And I guess I've probably asked that question hundreds of times, maybe thousands of times in my lifetime. I think it's human nature to want to know why. And I've also learned in the course of my life, thank you, that there are a whole lot of whys that are not going to be answered in my lifetime. There are a lot of things that I don't understand and probably won't ever understand. That doesn't keep me from wanting to know why. Even though sometimes I have to back away and say, well, I just don't know why, someone asked me. Or in after seeking and searching and studying and trying to figure something out, still not know why. And I have to back away from that question a little bit and say, well, I guess maybe it's not for me to know why. But in this instance, this afternoon, I think that, you know, there's a way that it seems most everything eventually is understandable. Now, there are some things that maybe we won't understand till we get to heaven, and all the whys will be answered. There are some things that when I was young, I asked why. And as I grew older, I began to understand why. I remember raising children, one of the first, when they're early, one of the first questions they seem to get or have whenever they start growing up a little bit is this little simple word, why. And there's a time period in your child's life to where you say, because I said so. It's just, you just do it. But I've also learned as I began to raise teenagers and as they grew up and began to ask that same question, that just saying, because I said so, wasn't enough. And so I had to begin to explain why I said it and why I thought this was the right thing to do. And I have found in my experience working for the Lord and serving the Lord and pastoring and ministering that there have been a lot of people come to me with the question, why? And I found myself in a position sometimes of having to say, I don't know why. And then I've also found myself in the position to have to say, I don't know why, but I will try to find out why. And I've also found myself finding later on down the road why, and able to go back and relate somewhat to why something had happened or why the Lord had permitted this to happen in their lives. This question here in this verse says, why do the heathen rage? Now, I'd like to think just a little bit about the term heathen. It is maybe, I remember it probably my earliest remembrance of the usage of the word heathen was kind of a slang word of talking about some wild children that were running around acting like heathens. And I've thought about that some and thought, well, what were the actions or activities they were doing that seem to categorize them as a heathen. And another thought or definition that seems to come to my mind when I think about a heathen, I thought about whenever the people that were civilized moved over into our Western world and began to populate it, and they ran into Native Americans that they called heathens. And I think probably an overview of what a heathen is, it's someone that's uncivilized. It seemed to be someone that didn't know about God, that their morals and that their lifestyle was so uncontrolled and undirected and uncivilized that they were called heathens. And I suppose that none of us here today would like to be categorized as a heathen. And I'm not saying that there are any heathens here. I don't know your children, but most of our children and most everybody that we are acquainted with and we know are just good civilized people, aren't they? They're not heathen. The heathens are out there. And so it's kind of easy whenever we start asking the question, why do the heathen rage? Why are they out there raging like that? And that brings us to the third term that's used in this little phrase, rage. When I think of rage, I think of uncontrolled anger. We're probably familiar with the term road rage. That's whenever you get out and people are driving up and down the road kind of wildly, and one person upsets the other, and then they do something heathenistic to get rid of that frustration, whether it's pulling a gun out and shooting the other car, or whether it's trying to run them off the road, or whatever it is, somehow or another, there's this anger or these strong emotions that are bottled up. But when I think of rage, I think of letting it out, letting it be exposed. I might have internal anger. I may have a whole lot of things going on inside me, but I'm able to keep it under wraps to where maybe you don't know about it. But when I think of rage, I think of something that is just out there. You're able to see it. It's not something hidden at all. And so whenever we put all this together, we come up with this idea or this question, why do the heathen rage? And I know probably at this point you're asking, what in the world are you talking about? I'd like to first of all, or next, give a testimony about what I've been doing for the last year. We moved out here to Missouri from back in Kentucky last July. We were here last year at our camp meeting. I just moved and made the last separations from where we lived in Kentucky. And we moved out here to take care of my wife's mother, Sister Allen, that was 93 years old. She lived over in Fairgrove, Missouri, which is close to Springfield. And we felt like it was our responsibility and that the Lord had told us that that's what he wanted us to do. So we did it. There were obstacles in the way, and there were situations that had to be overcome. And one particularly, probably you've heard it or might have heard it. If you haven't, I'll tell it to you again. One of the things, the obstacles to hinder that from happening was we owned a house. And if you'll remember, last year wasn't a good time to sell houses. So we knew that we were going to have to get rid of a house. There's no way I was going to be able to continue to pay a house payment and live out here. And so I told my wife that some of these things like this is going to have to happen. And so we talked about it and we thought, well, let's just pray the Lord will send somebody to buy it. And I remember vividly us together kneeling and praying, and Lord, would you send somebody to buy our house? Well, within the next week, I was working on one of those projects that you work on whenever you know you're trying to sell your house that's supposed to have been done a long time ago, trying to get it done, and I didn't hear anybody come to my door, and so my wife drove up and said, who was that just left? And I said, I didn't know anyone came. She said, yeah, there was a car that just drove out. Well, they left a note on the door, and on the door it said, we would like to buy your house. If you're interested, here's a phone number. And so we called that phone number, and they turned around and come back. And within 2 weeks, we had our house sold. They were cash buyers, and we were out of the way. And so the Lord did work things out for us to come here. Probably ever since I can look back into my adult life, I've always had a desire and a dream to be able to work with troubled young people. And that's been something that has been a challenge and a, like I said, a dream. I don't know where it came from altogether. But over the years, I have at times just fleetingly thought about that. And I remember moving to Kentucky and thinking, well, this is a time of change. Maybe I can do that then. And it just wasn't feasible for me to do that for several reasons. We did get involved with some volunteer work. Well, when we came out here, then I felt like that this was also the time for me to try to I'm getting old, and if I'm going to do anything more, I better get it done because I'm going to run out of steam pretty fast. And so last year at this time, I went and had a job interview and was hired at a boys' ranch that's up next to Springfield, and I work there 80 hours one week and off the next. And I have spent the last year doing that. And I have learned a whole lot of things. First, about myself. I've learned that there are a lot of things inside you that you don't know there until the pressure points are pushed and you get down to that place. And in the course of my life working with these boys, I spend, like I said, 80 hours a week with them one week. And so they're a good part of my life. These boys are very troubled. They have come from very abusive, destructive backgrounds. They have been abusive. They have issues of their own. They are in the, most of them, all of them practically, I think, are in the, what we would call the system. The state is taking them away from their parents or their parent or their guardian or out of a foster home and brought them to us. And they are heathen. I just wanted to tell you that. They're heathens. And that may sound like a derogatory term, but it isn't in this sense. They are actually uncivilized heathens. And they look just like everybody else that you see when you walk around and go to school and go to work. And they're just people. I've met some of their families. What ones have families? They look like people that you would see on the street or Walmart or whatever. They're heathens. Their backgrounds and why they are where they are and why they've been brought to me is because of all the lack of structure, the lack of the ingredients that cause people to make good, strong, rational choices in their lives. That's all absent. They don't have that. And they are full of rage. And my question then is, why do the heathen rage? And I spend a lot of time working in one-on-one with them. I spend a lot of time working with them and their therapist. I spend a lot of time working with them and psychologists and trying to figure out how to fix them. And so I've been observing a whole lot of things over this past year. And one of the things that I've concluded is I am so thankful for the saints of God. We do not comprehend what heritage and what valuable assets we have here today. You mothers and fathers and you young people and you children that are growing up in stable, secure homes do not understand, don't have a clue about what it's like to not have that. But we have a world full today of heathens that are raging. You say, well, how do they act that out? They act that out in lots of different ways. Sometimes they're silent. Sometimes you can't get anything out of them. I had one boy, he's not in my dorm today, but he was for quite a while, and he was about 6 foot tall, and he was about 15 or 16 years old, and he was so silent. And he was, I remember talking to his foster mother when they dropped him off into there at my dorm. And she came in to look around and look at the facility, the classroom, and so forth. And I said, I think he'll be okay here. He was mannerly. He was nice. He probably treated me better than any child, or any of my young people that's been there since I've been there. And I said, I think he will be okay. And she came back a little later and a few days later and said, how's he doing? And I said, he's doing great. He really is. And she said, well, it's just the honeymoon. I had him for about 3 or 4 months. He was always good. But he was a heathen. He had no clue about life. And so I began to, from the onset, I always try to figure out what's going on, where they come from, and what's happened in their life. This boy, from the age of 2 years old, his mom's boyfriend would put him in a box and roll him down the steps over and over again just to see, just to have fun, I guess. That was why he was so quiet and so silent. It was difficult to get inside him. But when we get inside, we find real big blocks, empty blocks of nothing there in their development. Things they don't even have a clue about. They don't comprehend. And I could tell you story after story after story after story of those kinds of things. And I've come to the conclusion that they are heathens. And I've found also that the world around us, for every one that I have in there, there are hundreds just like them out walking around the streets. If your children go to public school today, many of them are going to school with a bunch of heathens. And they're just one step from uncontrolled behaviors because they don't know how to control them. They don't know how to do that. And I'm not here just to present their problems to you. What I want to say this afternoon, I'd like to answer the question why to some of the questions that they have or questions you might have when we look out and see the world around about us and we say, why is it like that? Why are these children like that? Why are they in these places growing up in what we call a civilized world with all kinds of modern conveniences, though we have money issues going on today in our country, we're still a very prosperous, a very rich. This isn't the heathen Native Americans that we're going to visit in their villages bringing Christ to them. But I want to tell you something. They need Christ just as bad as any heathen ever needed him. And I would challenge you today, and part of my purpose in being here is to challenge you to realize that we have a responsibility to the heathen. If you came to America 300 years ago, and you came to the shores here to be able to worship God in liberty and in freedom, it wouldn't be too long before your Christian responsibility would cause you to begin to move out and begin to touch those people that were heathens at that time. It was one of the Christians, when they came here, their main outreach was to reach out and try to civilize the heathen. But I believe our purpose is to Christianize the heathen. And that's a challenge. There's a lot of them that don't know anything about God. There's a whole lot of them that don't know anything about a loving Father. And because they don't know anything about a loving Father, they don't know anything about a loving God. And to be able to bridge that gap it's sometimes beyond anything that I can come up with myself. Only God can do that. But we have a responsibility toward them. But before we go to that, what I'd like to do for a short time is what I believe is give you some answers to why the heathen are raging today. I'd like to turn to the book of Titus. in chapter 2, verses 4 and 5. I told you this would probably be a little different. That they may teach the young women to be sober, to love their husbands, to love their children, to be discreet, chaste, keepers at home, good, obedient to their own husbands, that the word of God be not blasphemed. I mentioned earlier that you and I have a godly and a wonderful, precious heritage. Now, this is one of the heritages, or one of those things that we have inherited that is so tremendously valuable. And the reason why, one of the reasons why I bring this up is because anytime something is happening in a culture, it always affects everybody to a certain degree. And it affects the church also. And you and I are part of that. And we know, those of us anyway that are a little older, know that this has been one of those standard teachings that we've had for years and years, ever since I've been around, the importance of, the responsibility of, that our women stay home and be chaste keepers, taking care of their children. We live in a time that is very difficult for that to happen. Because of our economic standards, it's not easy for my husbands and for wives to stay at home and not provide some income to our households, because we live in that kind of world. But we are reaping, one of the reasons why we are full of heathen today is because the women left their homes and went out and got jobs. Now, I know this sounds basic and very elementary, but I feel impressed and feel that it's important that we reemphasize today, because every day I run into this, the reason why this boy is doing what he's doing or why he did what he did was because mom was gone. Now, most of the time, it wasn't altogether her fault. She was gone because he was gone. And he was an absent person. She made a lot of bad choices. I've got one boy in my dorm that just came the other day, 12 years old. His mother was on methamphetamines when he was born. So he was a meth baby. And within a short time, they took him away from her. And then they gave him back to her. And so until he was 4 years old, he lived in around that kind of environment. And then finally they took him away. And now he has lived in the system, different foster homes and different residential cares and whatever. And he comes to my dorm with this big, he's a little old short guy, but it's him against the whole world. And he won't take any kind of control. He won't allow me to control. He's raging inside. But it's because of his mom. I sat in court one day, and we were representing a little boy. He was about 3 years old at the time in court. But he had been out of his home since he was 7 months old. And I watched them bring his mother in, shackles on her ankles, with prison garb on, and listen to her give up her parental rights to this little child because she couldn't kick her drug habit. And she made the choice. It's either the little baby or the drugs. And she chose the drugs. I know she didn't. She cried. She was a wreck. She didn't want to, but she couldn't help herself. And so she made those kind of choices, terrible, bad choices. But it was almost like that she was a heathen. She's growing up in a heathen society. We're living in a heathenistic society. As civilized as we think we might be, it's all heathenistic. I don't recommend it. But if you ever watch a little bit of television, it's heathenistic. Everything around us, our media is full of heathenistic practices. Our school systems promote heathenistic ideas. One of the main premises of heathenism is that position is that they don't believe in God. And we know what our society is doing. One of the reasons why we have the heathen raging today is because moms left home. Let's not forget that. It's not going to get any easier for you sisters to stay at home and raise your children, but it's still going to be right. It'll always be right to do that. If you have to take substandard housing, if you have to live a lesser lifestyle, an older vehicle, it's better than leaving children at home or leaving them at home by themselves. I could tell you time after time of these children. I've got a boy that is so difficult. He thinks he's an adult, so he argues with me all the time. And he gets sent in his room over and over every day. He tells me I can't help it. But his mom, who didn't have a husband, she's a prison guard in a prison, she made him her companion. Not in a immoral way, maybe, but just she shared with him her life. Shared with him his emotions and the struggles she went through. And so here's this little 14-year-old boy having to figure out what adult life's like. And he's warped. He's just warped. But it's all because of what happened at home. So one of the things I wanted to mention this afternoon is that it's important that we hold on to this position, the biblical position, that women are to stay at home and be chaste keepers at home. There are a lot of, I'm not going to spend time on that, but there's a lot of creative ways that you can help this situation and make it possible to provide maybe the incomes that need to be provided to help you survive in our world. But don't neglect your children for it. In Mark, the 10th chapter, and I know you know these things, but I just feel like it's important for us to emphasize them or reemphasize them. Mark, the 10th chapter, beginning at verse 1. He rose from thence and cometh into the coast of Judea by the farther side of the Jordan, and the people resort unto him again, and as he was wont, he taught them again. The Pharisees came to him and asked him, Is it lawful for a man to put away his wife, tempting him? And he answered and said unto them, What did Moses command you? And they said, Moses suffered to write a bill of divorcement and to put her away. Jesus answered and said unto them, For the hardness of your heart he wrote this precept. But from the beginning of the creation, God made them male and female. For this cause shall a man leave his father and mother and cleave to his wife, and they twain shall be one flesh. So then they are no more twain, but one flesh. What therefore God hath joined together, let not man put asunder. And in the house his disciple asked him again of the same matter. And he saith unto them, Whosoever shall put away his wife and marry another, committeth adultery against her. And if a woman shall put away her husband and be married to another, she committeth adultery. Now I again know that this is a very basic teaching. But it is the very crux of why the heathen rage today. The marriage issue has destroyed our civilization as we've known it. The divorce and the divorce rate that continues to get greater, and the whole marriage question that our society today is struggling with, and the same-sex marriage, and all of that issue is all a result of the Christian message changing from that it is unlawful for a man to put away his wife or for a woman to put away her husband and be married to someone else. That's considered adultery. Divorce was never in God's plan, and it never will be in God's plan. We know that, don't we? But it's under attack today. You and I are experiencing around us in our world today, and also it comes right in among us. It will affect your children. It'll affect your families. It continues to just creep in closer and closer. And it's no longer creeping. It's just coming in like a flood. And the only thing that we can do to safeguard ourselves from falling into the same pitfalls and for our children to fall into the same places is for us to hold on to the same definite view. One man, one woman, till death do you part. It's so critical. There's 76 boys on our ranch. There is not one with a stable family that I know of. It's just, there is, and it's everywhere. It's permeated our society. The devil, isn't he attacking your marriage? He is mine. And we just finished celebrating, we're fixing to celebrate our 40th anniversary. And somebody asked me, well, what is one of the keys? And I said, well, I think the number one key is this. Divorce has never been considered as an option. Never. That means no matter what we go through, it's just not going to... It can be the worst case scenario, but we're not going to consider that. And you might say, yeah, but you don't know what I'm... And I understand. I've been around a while and I've heard a lot of stories. And I know they can get very difficult and they can be very painful. And I'm not minimizing that at all. But I want to us, in spite of all of that, and that means we are to reach out to the heathen, reach out to those that are in those places. We want to show them love and we want to show them care and concern. And just, we want to show them that we understand that it's a painful thing. But we also want to hold on to the fact that it's still right for a man and a woman to stay married and work through the issues. I'll tell you a little story. I've told some of you this, but I was sitting in group the other day, or a while back, and we were talking. We do that every day, and we were discussing something, and my cell phone goes off, and it's not supposed to. You're supposed to turn it off before you go to group. But my wife called me, and I forgot to turn it on vibrate, and so I answered it, and I said, babe, we're having group. I'll call you back in a little bit. And I hung up. And one of the boys looked, he said, Mr. Tony, babe? I said, well, yeah, I'm not that old. And he said, you're an old man. And I said, I'm not so old as you think. In my mind, I'm still pretty young. And then I stopped for a minute and I said, 40 years I've been married. And they stopped and listened for... It was like a shock went over their face. And then they all started clapping. And I felt like crying. Because they have never had that kind of security or stability in their life. Never. And they hunger for it. They cry out for it. I would request prayer. I continue to request prayer from every person that I meet. That you would pray for me, that I would know how. The institution I work at is not a Christian institution, so I'm very limited. I've been called on the carpet for praying with them. And so I have to work under radar a lot of times. And then sometimes I don't. Sometimes I just open with them, particularly if I see that what we are offering them is failing, then I start offering them the solution. And I haven't got caught with that yet, but I probably will someday. But the point being, these young people don't know what marriage is. They really don't. Some of them have their issues in my dorm. They've offended. Every one of them have. They have perverted ideas about things, and they have identity problems and all that, just on and on and on. And you could look at that and say, that's sick. That's awful. It's unbelievable. It is, in one sense. But in another sense, these are boys just like your boy that hungers for love and hungers for security and stability. And we live in a world surrounded by those kinds of people. The one other point or thought I wanted to mention was one of the signs in Timothy where it talks about the signs of the time, the end of time. One of the signs would be a lack of natural affection. And we look at that and we see a whole lot of unnatural affections going on in different ways. We see mothers that are willing to drown their babies. We see, like I mentioned earlier, people that are willing to give up children for drugs or give up children for other things like that. And we see unnatural affections being around us in our world today that are sometimes so perverted and so obscene and so sickening for us that part of us would want to just, yuck, stay away from me. I don't want anything to do with that or with you. But these heathen are heathens. And part of what that means is they don't know. They don't understand why. And they're being told a lot of, I call it psycho-garbo, psychological garbage, that this is okay or that's okay or this, all these kinds of things. And you and I sometimes want to distance ourselves from all of that because it is something difficult for us that have been so sheltered and so blessed that we don't, even that, all of that is beginning to surround us, isn't it? Come into our own homes sometimes, our own families, or some of our loved ones. But I want to tell you that it's getting bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger all the time. Everybody around, or not everybody, a lot of people around you are affected by these kinds of things. This is why the heathen are raging today. The principles that you and I know to be truth, the principles that we've been taught about family and about home and about raising children and about being there for them, helping them develop from those early ages on, from the day they enter the world, even prior to. Can you imagine entering the world a drug addict and the effect that would have on you? The little boy that we represented in court in an organization that we were volunteering for, he was one of those. And he cried for 7 months, hardly stopping, screaming because of, and the foster mother said, I don't know if we can take this. But he eventually calmed down and eventually, but what's he going to, when he starts asking, why did my mom choose drugs over me? Who's going to answer that one? And all the things that that produces in a child's life and in an adult's life, because the adults that we are dealing with today that are having these children, we're also in some of the same situations. It's flooding in, and I'm reminded of our teachings concerning the last days and concerning the spirits of the devil that were going to be loosed in the last days. He said the dragon spirit would be loosed on us for a season. That spirit is the heathen spirit. It's a pagan spirit. It is an anti-God spirit. And we are reaping now those things that my dad used to get up here and talk about, the cares of life and the deceitfulness of riches and getting carried away with the cares of this world and being interested in having a good home and a good car and all that, willing at the expense of my home to go out and get that job and go out and work when I should be staying at home with my children. All those warnings, remember all of those? Today, the heathen are raging. The people are no longer... I want to tell you something, and I'm not discounting that there's still a ministry or a message to go out into sectism and work there. There's still a few people there, but there's not very many. Our message, our ministry today in these last days is to reach out to those people that are heathens. They don't know anything about God. But they'll tell you sometimes one boy in my dorm offended his younger brother. And we talked about that in group. And he said, well, my brother is no different than an ant. They're on the same level as far as value goes. And I said, where did you get that? He got it from the heathens. If you took a little time, and I don't encourage you to do this unless you are capable of handling it, but if you just stop someday at a bookstore and you want to go in and just read what the teenage bookshelves are carrying today. It's all paranormal stuff. It's all Twilight. It's all people turning into animals and animals turning into people and back and forth. It's all fantasy. It's all supernatural stuff. And you think, why would they be? Why? I'm thinking, you know, what's wrong with just an old-fashioned pioneer story or something like that? They don't want anything to do with any of that. It's not of interest to them. They live in a fantasy world. The reason for that is because reality is too painful. And they still need help. I talked to one day, and I've told this story to some of you also, but the one boy that said that, my brother and an aunt are on the same level. I've listened to him and I've let him tell me a lot of stuff because he's very intelligent. He's studied some other religions and he's tried to tell me about how those are. And reincarnation is something he tends to feel like is right. And so I listened to all of that. I don't tell him that's garbage. I say, well, that's interesting. I listened to his point of view. But one night, a while back, I was standing at his door after everybody had gone to bed and was just talking to him. And he was having issues and problems. And I said, what would you think if I told you that we could just take everything that's happened in your life, and this boy is a result of a mother being raped in Japan when she was in the service. So he has no clue who his dad is. And I said, what would you think if we could take your past and just wipe it off and start all over? And he said, I'd like that. I said, that's what I believe. That's what Christianity is. You can have it all wiped away and start all over. He was a little bit stunned to think about that. And I've got him to start reading some stuff about God and about Christianity and values. But you have to be willing to listen to his other stuff to even allow him to, or get him to listen to you. These things, the heathen are raging, they're hurting. Most people rage whenever they're hurting. When anger and bitterness and so forth gets bottled up long enough, they finally let it out. And what you and I see as we listen to the news or read the paper or observe what's going on, and we look out to our world, and you go to Walmart and watch as they go in and out with their tattoos and with their piercings and with their weird looks and with their unclothed behaviors and all of those things, and you think, yuck, it's awful. Who'd want one of those stupid things on your leg or all over your body or why? And I understand all of that because there's a part of me that says the same thing. And yet underneath is a very insecure, hurting, troubled heathen that you and I should be crying out. We know why they're hurting. We also have the solutions and the answers to that. Can we offer them a stable home and secure place? Not all of them. Not very many of them. But I'm reminded of a story that was posted on our bulletin board. I've read it before, but it was just recently on our bulletin board at work. And it's about the man that went away for the weekend to a beach town just to get away. He was troubled and having a lot of difficulties, and so he got away for a while. And they had a storm that night, and the very next morning he got up real early to walk on the beach. While he's walking on the beach, all these starfish, I believe it is, I think, had been blown up onto the beach. And there were thousands of them. And he saw this little boy out there picking them up and throwing them back in. And he walked over to him and he said, what are you doing? And he said, I'm throwing these back in. He said, they'll die. If the sun comes up on these, they're all going to die. And he said, I'm going to throw them back in. And he said, you can't throw all these out here. He said, what possible chance do you have of getting these all back in the water? And he said, I don't know, but threw another one back in. He said, that one will be glad I did. It's the same way with you and I, helping people one-on-one. These, you parents that are taking those in that would grow up heathen, if it wasn't for you, are doing a very valuable service to God. And those of us that might not be doing that, I would encourage you to consider it as a possibility of being able to help a few heathens. Because those heathens might tell some other heathen they might change. You might offer them a stable surrounding, a background, a loving family that they never had. But on top of that, you'll get your mind off of yourself. And I think that's probably the most important thing I've said here today. And I desire your prayers that I would be able to understand what the Lord is asking me to do and asking us to do.